Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the FASD Success Show. It's episode number 51. Amazing. If you are here and you are listening, thank you so much. You know, this podcast is all about creating FASD success, success in caregivers, success in individuals on the spectrum, success with teachers, frontline workers, all to make life better for everybody. And how do we do that? We do that by talking to some incredible people, interviewing some incredible people, and just finding out the goods and finding out what works and what's practical. And we are going to do just that in this episode. We have a great interview. We have a great interview today. It is with Megan Tucker, and she is a trainer out of the Lakeland Center for Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder in Cold Lake, Alberta. We talk about all types of things. You're going to love it. But I just wanted to say, before we get going, I wanted to check in. How are you doing? Where are you listening? Are you on a walk? Are you driving? Are you doing dishes? Are you having a shower? Are you practicing yoga, some sort of martial arts? You know, what are you doing? And it's cool to hear from people who tell me all the cool things that they do when they listen to the show. But whatever you're doing, I'm glad you're doing it, and I'm glad you are here. If you like the show, if this is maybe your first show, hey, welcome. And you find out that you like the show and you want more, and we tend to update, have a brand new show every single week, you can go to any way that you get the podcast. Anyway, Google, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, there's a whole whack more. And all you have to do is just subscribe to the show. And as soon as we upload one, it goes boom, right into your phone. And it lets you know that we have a brand new episode, because we're trying to give as much good information as possible. And we're doing that today. But I got to tell you, today, as I am recording this, it's freezing. Well, I know that I live in northeastern Ontario, right, in Canada, but it's minus 27 degrees outside. That is cold. That is super cold. And I know there's other parts of even Canada that are colder. Oh, for my American friends, minus 27 degrees Celsius is minus 16 Fahrenheit, because I know you guys do things a little bit different, but different doesn't mean bad. So it's freezing, so I'm just decked out. I got the hoodies, the slippers with the big socks, jogging pants. You know, I am done up. So I know this is an audio only podcast, but just picture it. You know, I'm just wearing the warmest, comfiest things I can, because we got to get through the winter. We got to get through January. We got to get through what we're going through right now. And I've been talking to folks that I coach on a regular basis in different groups. And this is the time of year which is sluggish, and a lot of us feel weighted down, and we're trying to, it feels like we're trying to walk through mud, or in this case, really heavy, wet snow. So I just want to recognize and let you know that everybody's feeling that way. So if you're feeling that way, it is okay, and we're all going to get through this together, because we've got living to do and we got really cool things to look forward to. So hunker down, be safe, mask up, all that good stuff. Anywho, so let's get to today. Let's get right to today. I have a few things to say before we go into the interview. One is trigger warning. Okay, trigger warning. We talk about a lot of cool things, but we do talk about like addictions. We do talk about like trauma. We do talk about some things that might trigger you. Okay, so just know that going in. But it's not super scary. But I also just want to give that that warning, because we are going to be talking about harm reduction today. Yeah, so you know, the next, I guess, disclaimer is don't listen to this with your kids around, because we do talk about some adult stuff, and You know, you're the parent. You do what you want to do. But I know some episodes you have your kids listen to it. So I just want to have you prepared, because if your kids are on the spectrum and they take things out of context, just a heads up about that. But this is important to talk about. And today, what we were going to be spending a little bit of time on, actually, is harm reduction. We're going to be talking about what happens when, because I know, again, if you have a younger kid on the spectrum, I'm not trying to scare you, but this is a spectrum. So sometimes you would get, older kids that struggle with substance abuse, with addiction, mental health. We get individuals that like are truant, you know, that run away and are on the street. And that's what we don't want. That's what we absolutely don't want. So one of the methods, one of the models that I've used as a caregiver and that I know is successful for individuals on the spectrum is the harm reduction model. Now, when you look at the harm reduction model, there's a different definition. There's various definitions, and a lot of it is in the context of addictions, but I want to apply this to everything, and especially those extreme symptoms, those extreme behaviors that you are seeing, like running away, truancy, all that kind of stuff. But I did find a definition that I like, and that it's where I'm coming from with this. So the harm reduction definition that I'm using here is: harm reduction or harm minimization refers to a range of public health policies designed to lessen the negative social and or physical consequences associated with various human behaviors, both legal and illegal. Okay. So also another disclaimer, like I am going to very specifically talk about what I did as a foster parent, telling you the story of what I did and why I did that. Okay. So, but it's not a super huge deal once you hear about it. I just wanted to definitely put that disclaimer out there today, because it's important, man. If I get so many messages of people feeling lost and their kids are running away and, just these extreme behaviors that they're avoiding the house and they're hanging with people that they shouldn't be hanging with and doing things they shouldn't be doing and getting themselves in some very vulnerable positions and decision making, and we're going to talk about that. And I am so thankful we're talking about this with Megan Tucker, who is a training coordinator slash like she does prevention conversations. She gets it. She knows what she's talking about. So I'm just going to read her bio real quick. So Megan Tucker is a rehabilitation practitioner and has studied humanities at the University of Alberta. She is currently the training coordinator as well as a prevention conversation facilitator at the Lakeland Center for FASD. Megan has worked at the Lakeland Center for almost 10 years in multiple capacities. And I love the Lakeland Center. It should be one of the gold standards for how you run fetal alcohol programming. But I digress. Megan started at the center as a transition coordinator, where she created and implemented the transition to adulthood program currently in place at the center. Megan added a second role back in 2012 as the children's coordinator as part of the center's post-diagnostic services. While in the role, Megan started to provide FASD training in the Lakeland region as well as at conferences outside of the region. And I have met Megan at many a conferences, and she's sweet and she is knowledgeable and she really cares. And she's going to give you some great insight to a lot of things. It doesn't matter what's going on in your dealings with somebody on the spectrum. Okay, so I'm ready. Are you ready? All right, let's have some fun. Let's go. And here we are, Megan Tucker. Buddy, it's always great to catch up with you. Thanks so much for joining me on the show.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Perfectly.
Yeah, okay, cool. That was delayed, but not a big deal. I thought maybe in that moment you decided, uh-oh, what am I doing here?
No, you know what's happening? I have a child behind me who's making something, and I can hear it. And I just had that thought, like, can you hear it?
No.
Okay, good.
We cannot hear it. It's so good. Your mechanisms, your instruments of voice projection are working just fine. Yes. Now, it is so cool to have you. It is so cool to see you. You know, I love folks who train folks about fetal alcohol, and I love the topic we're talking about today. It's not the sexiest topic, to use that term loosely, but it's a very important topic. Now, before we do that, we always like to find the Marvel Avengers origin story. And, you know, people go check out the blog at fasd.com/podcast, because Megan's hair is that of a superhero. A superhero would don what you do with your do, and we dig it. So, Megan, how did you get involved with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder in Lakeland?
Well, it kind of goes back to childhood, actually. As a kid, when I was going to school, I was really shy, and I went to a couple different schools, and each school, I would always befriend kids with disabilities. I could always see that they had no one, and I was really shy, and I could just see that they had a bigger struggle than I did, and so I spent my elementary years finishing my work early so I could get to the back of the class and help this girl named Elizabeth with, she had some disabilities. And I just would work so hard just so that I could help her, because she loved it when I helped her. You could just see the joy in her face when someone showed up. And so then that kind of led me into rehabilitation practitioner. That's what my first diploma was in. And it was really about working with people with disabilities, to be that connection, that someone that cares, because it made a huge difference in her life. And when I was in college in that program, her dad showed up at my class to tell everyone how great I was. And I was like, oh my God, right? So,
oh my God, dude, you're busting out with the tearjerker right away. That's so sweet. And so in your struggle to socialize, you know, you helped the individuals with disabilities, and you got great pleasure and purpose, and you got hooked, right?
Yep. I got hooked. And so then in high school, that's what I did for work experience. And my work experience teacher was like, we don't do that. And I said, well, there is a student here in the school, and why can't I just help her? And so they did. They kind of went outside the box so that I could. And then I switched to a different high school in grade 12, and there was another girl with cerebral palsy, and so then I also worked with her. We would go for walks, I would massage her feet, I would read to her Harry Potter, and there was so much joy that she had from, you could just see it, like she had no verbal ability, but every time I walked in the room, she would squeal with joy. So I just knew that I was making a difference in her life. And so then when I went to school, went to college, that's what I focused on. And after college, I started working in a school with a high incidence of FASD. And I could see that those kids were different, but no one else could see it. They just kept getting blamed. They just were always in trouble. And I was like, I don't think they're doing it on purpose. And so then I had to modify my learning from college to actually make behavioral programs for kids with FASD. And I made them work, which is a hard task. I didn't know at the time.
Right. But and yeah, because you had to change what you learned from school, because you didn't learn about FASD at school.
Not really. No, barely. And most of what I learned was behavior modification, which doesn't work with FASD. And so I had to modify the behavior modification programs, but I did it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Cool. So you're working at schools, and you instinctively, intuitively knew something was different about individuals on the spectrum. So how did you yourself get training? Like, where did you go? Did you hit the internet? How did you come to get education about it?
Well, funny thing, one of the students that I was working with got diagnosed from the Lakeland Center for FASD, and they came in and did a training session. And I was just like, oh my God, this is it. This is what I need to delve into, because nobody is getting it. And I was getting it. And so then I was just like, I need to do more of this. Right. And so, you know, a couple of years later, I applied with the center, and I've been there ever since. 11 years.
Okay, well, I do not want to do any sort of date or time to avoid putting my foot in my mouth, which I'm very capable to do and probably will do several times in the chat. But here, you obviously, your energy and your passion for this is palpable. Like, that's everybody can already feel it, and it's they're either 6 minutes into their walk or their drive or whatever, and they know what's up. So when what roles have you played at Lakeland, and what has landed you, you know, because when I asked Lisa who to talk to about harm reduction, I didn't even get the sentence out and she said your name. So how did we transition to that area?
Oh, well, funny you mentioned transition, because that's where I started. So when I first started, I started with a pilot project with the center called the Transition to Adulthood Program. So I was a transition coordinator, and it was a brand new project. It was Audrey's brainchild. So I was working directly under Audrey McFarlane, and she was guiding me. But the whole time, she was like, okay, this has never been created. There's nothing else like it. So use your brain and come up with something. And that is really what sucked me into the center hard. that ability to use my creative brain, and that she could see that I had that that spark in me. And so, yeah, I ran with it. And for about 5 years, I created the program. I worked with Dorothy Badry, did some research, and we, you know, created a state-of-the-art transition to adulthood program. I, you know, rewrote the book. I, you know, created the whole thing, and then I passed it off. And because I like new things because my brain works sure. that way. And yep. So then I also did a little bit of work with children who were going through the diagnostic process and their families and schools. And that's kind of how I really got into training, because I was training those schools. You know, every time a kid got diagnosed, I would go in and talk to the school staff, and teachers would say to me, oh my gosh, we've had some training before, but we actually didn't get the same thing out of it. Right. And so then that really motivated me to keep going with training, because people were telling me, like, the way you say it makes it make so much more sense. Right. And
ooh, that's yeah. so good. That is the best endorsement a yeah. trainer can get, right? Like, you're like, that's literally what I want my job to be able to do.
Yeah. And I wasn't really intending to be a trainer. It just kind of happened that way, that I was good at it. And the awesome thing about the center is they're so flexible. They're like, oh, you're good at that? All right, let's do this. And so then over time, we were able to create a new role for me. Where now I'm a full-time trainer. Part of my role is prevention conversation. Of course, it's, you know, you got to be creative with funding to create new roles. So part of what I do is prevention work, and I work with a provincial team. We all have the same training, really up to date. Alberta's really ahead of the game there with that prevention work. Well, we get a lot of help from Dr. Nancy Poole in
BC. She's the best.
Yeah, we love her.
She's not name dropping to be to show her authority. She's name dropping because she's working with excellent people.
Yeah,
Dr. Nancy Poole, Dr. Dorothy Badry, like, these people are superstars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love working with these ladies. And yeah, it's like when you find someone else who has the passion, you just feel it, and then I keep going back, right? I'm just like, what else does Nancy have?
Yeah, like, they have done it. I'm the same way. Dr. Jackie Pie, I'm all over it. You know, mm-hmm. whatever she puts out, because you talk about explaining it really well. I'm a lover of Dan Dabowski, Donna DeBolt. Yes. Years and years of wisdom, and you're just like, oh God, you're so good. Could I be a fraction of how awesome you are?
Yeah,
and that's why, like, even when I train, I'm saying, you know, 90% of this that's coming out of my mouth is from so-and-so, this person. I could never say it was mine anyways, because they'd figure it out pretty darn quick. They'd be like, the jig is up. But hey, listen, since we have you here, and you do train, and we do, you know, our parents want to talk about harm reduction because this is that's a scary time, can be a scary time for individuals on the spectrum. You did an amazing workshop for our guys at the Caregiver Kickstart, which we thank. And I just wanted to go over some of the stuff you talked about, if that's cool for these guys as well. Because some of it really hit home, and specifically what I liked what you talked about when you first began, you said FASD has many effects on the same person, and you started there. So A, what did you kind of mean by that? And B, why do you start there with your training?
So, yeah. So when we're talking about FASD, we have to focus on the person. We have to focus on the individual who's been, you know, who's dealing with that, all of those struggles every day, right? And so we have to acknowledge that every single person with FASD is different. And that is the biggest misunderstanding, right? And that's where so many people get hung up, and they maybe stop looking into FASD because they aren't believing it, because they've seen two people and they're completely different. And so they think FASD is not real. And I've had people say that to me. They're like, well, I don't really believe it's a thing. It's just a fad. Right. And so right. I always start with, like, even if you know 10 people with FASD, you're never going to see the same person. It's always going to be different. We have to focus that on the fact that the individual is going to be unique, just like we all are, right? And so those brain differences work the same way. There's so much uniqueness across the board.
And one of the things, and you use the visual of an individual who's chronologically, you know, 18 years old, but obviously on the inside, because the brain has different domains and works differently, they could even be spread out different ages and different areas of functioning. Mm-hmm. But what gets us is caregivers, and frankly, I understand people that don't understand FASD sees a physically mature 18-year-old with expressive language that is greater than an 18-year-old. No facial features. And so that's why they don't believe it. Yeah. And on top of that, the individual is so inconsistently consistent. They see that sometimes they can.
Yes. Yeah. Those good days are kind of like, I don't even know what to call it. Sometimes it's not always a good thing, because those good days, they
double-edged sword.
Yeah. They set our expectations too high. Because those good days, I can't think of a good analogy.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I equate it to, like, so as a caregiver, a good day I felt was like, if you've ever body surfed in the ocean, if you ever, like, when the wave was coming and you swam and the wave can literally pick you up and you feel like you're floating, and it's so much fun.
Yeah.
Right. So that, like, that's what I always pictured, and I felt, you know, with being a caregiver, is that it was like a wave, and that's where I felt the most free. I remember being an exchange student in Costa Rica, and, you know, there's no eggshells. Everyone's getting along. You know, they're not feeling like a prisoner in their own home. But this is where it comes from, because they look normal, talk normal. But, you know, they can act disabled, you know, they can have challenges. And that is where they can become vulnerable and get into harmful situations because of just that, right?
Yes.
You know, beautiful, expressive, and seems more capable than they are. And so, and I know you had listed some issues. And so not only the face, but we know trouble problem solving, understanding cause and effect, the inability to cope with stress. So is there any other reasons why folks on the spectrum get themselves into these harmful situations?
Yeah. So there's like this, you know, that like spidey sense that you get when things aren't safe. Your intuition, when you're like looking down a dark back alley and you're like, oh, I don't want to go there, right? Like, that's creepy. That's important, right? That's really important. It keeps us out of danger and it keeps us out of trouble. And a lot of people with FASD don't seem to have that working. And so they look down the back alley and go, what is down there? That looks cool. And we're all like, no, don't do it. Don't go. And they go, right? And they go every time. And I've seen it happen. You know, they can be alone for 5 minutes and they've walked down a back alley, met a drug dealer, invited him into their home. And you're just like, how did this happen? I turned my back for 5 minutes. And it's literally, it can be just like that, that within 5 minutes, they've met a drug dealer and invited them in their home just because they went down the back alley that their brain didn't tell them could be unsafe, could be dangerous, right? So there's that whole, inability to kind of have good judgment in those situations. They need someone outside of themselves to say, hey, wait a minute, that's actually kind of a creepy looking place and we should avoid it. We should go where there's light, right? And yeah, I've had so many clients get into those bad situations.
And it stems from the brain, not the individual, because we also, if you think about, we talk about it on the show a lot and in the training about dismaturity, about being, so if an individual is 18-year-old chronologically, but emotionally, developmentally, they could be like half their age on the inside. So you see, so not only might you struggle with impulse control, but you might be a little developmentally dismature, don't really understand or are affected by natural and logical consequences. You want connection. You see a back alley with a dude in it, right? And everybody's your friend because developmentally that's where you are. You know, you talk about the spidey sense. And bingo bongo, or, you know, there's a homeless guy sitting in your kitchen because they have big hearts.
Yeah.
So without considering what goes into it, they just want to help. Mm-hmm. And so this is where they could get into these harmful situations. And I know we're providing a bit of levity to it, but, you know, that could also mean they could be in some really tough situations and we don't want them to ever face consequences where they can't bounce back from.
Yeah. And that's the tricky part, right? Is I've actually had clients who they meet their new best friend and then their new best friend will then say to them, hey, can you deliver this bag for me to this house? And they're like, okay, sure. Right. And so they don't even realize they've become a drug runner. Right. And even when they would tell me, oh yeah, I made a new friend. Oh yeah. What have you guys been doing? Oh, you know, we hang out and I get to deliver bags and it's pretty cool. And I'm like, oh yeah, what's in the bag? And they're like, oh, I don't know. I'm not supposed to look. I'm like, okay, good.
And right? They're not even questioning it.
Yeah. Not even a question.
They told me not to look and I want to please. Yeah. Not saying, this is odd, right? Where you say about that spidey sense. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem, first of all, in your elevator pitch, what would you describe is the harm reduction model?
Yeah. So for me, the root of everything is prevention. We need to understand that individual's brain. We need to understand where there might be some deficits or some issues or some inconsistencies. And if we see that they have that kind of poor judgment, they don't have that kind of spidey sense, then we need to make sure that they have supervision that matches whatever their developmental age might be, right? So like if they are six developmentally, six-year-olds need parents for a reason. And so even if this individual is 17, they're still six in their social maturity. And so we need to provide that amount of supervision and guidance. So really it goes back to number one, understanding their brain, and number two, providing what that brain needs, right? Not looking at the physical, right?
Yeah, I agree. Because there's consequences to looking just at the physical and assuming because look normal, talk normal, that this is willful or purposeful. Some of the, you know, you even said, oh, geez, talk about transition. No doubt you've been doing this a while. There are side effects. Until you said it, I didn't even really think about it that way. But there's side effects of misunderstanding behaviors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So if you are looking at that individual and looking at how they look and looking at their behaviors as purposeful and willful, then you're going to be constantly mad at them And then you're not going to provide the supports they need. You're going to be distant, disconnected. And what do they need most? Connection. We all need connection so badly. We need to be cared about. We need to know that we're good and valuable people. And that's even more important when your social maturity is at the level of a six-year-old, for example, right? Even more important to feel connected and valued and loved. That's what kids need. They're constantly like, oh, I want to be with you. Where are you going? Can I come? Right? And we get so angry at the behavior and we misinterpret it and then we disconnect. And then that's where the child goes to look for connection elsewhere. That's where they go down the back alley. Because we've disconnected, because we didn't understand their brain, because we misinterpreted their behaviors and we're angry, right? And so it all goes back to, we have to understand that this is brain-based. They're not doing it on purpose, that they're struggling, really struggling, and they really need our support and guidance so that they can know what to do and when to do it so that they can do the right thing and we can be happy, right? So we end up doing the opposite. We disconnect when we need to connect more. We need to show up more so we can catch the good things, so we can let them know you're good, you're valuable, this is great, like keep going, right? Because if we aren't saying keep going, they're feeling, I don't belong in this world. And what's the point, right? So that connection is viral.
And not only can it spiral, but if I'm understanding right, individuals on the spectrum are more susceptible to suicidal ideologies, right? Yeah, if I said the word right, and also suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot on the line for not recognizing that this is brain-based. Here comes the problem. It's hard. As the trainer, I'll be a little devil's advocate, because I'll be on the other side as the parent, which I'm sure you've heard all of it. That's easier said than done when you want to help and they either they don't want help, mm-hmm. right? Or you want to help and they're saying god awful things to you, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's not a reciprocal, symbiotic, helper helpee relationship. What do you say to those folks who really struggle with getting past that when they hear these things and, see some of this?
Yeah. So we really have to take a step back and look at the situation from the outside, because when you're in it, it's hard. When you're in it, you're holding grudges. And here's the thing. If you're holding a grudge against someone who has a brain-based disability and has a memory deficit, you're not going to get very far because they're going to forget. And so they don't even know why you're mad at them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So you have to really take a step back and look at the whole picture. Be like, okay, so I'm mad because they've consistently made me mad, every single day for 10 days straight. And so you have to acknowledge that you're holding a grudge. And that's, it's hard to do sometimes when you're in that moment of frustration and anger. But we have to be able to take a step outside, take a step into the bathroom, close the door, lock it, and really like cry. And then really just like acknowledge it. Just like, oh my gosh, he's been awful for 10 days straight and I'm losing my mind. And it's not my fault. It's not his fault. This is the situation we're in, and I got to be the one to take a deep breath and start fresh, right? So that can be tough, but it needs to happen, because if you can start fresh and let go of some of those like resentments and those grudges that you have for 10 days of behaviors, then you can, you come out with a fresh, like, okay, we're going to start over today. And that works for them too, because often if you've got a memory deficit, you're starting fresh pretty often, right? So if you can also get to that place of like, let's let it go, let's move forward, and let's meet today for today, and let's meet tomorrow for tomorrow. Let's not add them together. And if you stack up your anger, it's really hard to then dig yourself out, right?
I'm thinking of this as if I'm listening to us in a car right now, by the way, make sure both hands are on the wheel, or if they're running right now, keep going. We're really digging it, right? Woo woo. And they'll say, easy for you to say, Megan Tucker, but you can say it because you have individuals at home with brain differences. So you're not sitting on your nanny soapbox right? Like, you also use these same things you're talking about in your own life.
Yeah, I have to do this all the time. I have to remind myself that they're not doing it to me on purpose, that I love them and they love me, and that I can't be holding a grudge, right? I have to do that. And so I do require a lot of time outside, long breaks in the bathroom. And those long walks are super helpful. And actually, when you bring them with you, those walks are therapeutic. Walking is really, really good for the brain, really good for trauma, really good for kind of overcoming some of that when you can connect to the earth.
I only wanted to mention that because, you know exactly what you're talking about, and you sound like Mary Poppins, like, you know what I mean? So I didn't want people to get that impression, you know, like the information you're giving is coming from not only years of clinical and field experience, but you get it at home.
Yeah. Yeah. So I do have, several people in my home who have ADHD. I have a child who had meningitis as an infant, and his brain was under pressure and did receive damage that would be similar to FASD or look similar to FASD. And so in the early years, I was having a real hard time. I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't drink. Why does my kid look like he has FASD? Right. So after lots of pediatrician visits, we discovered that the meningitis did in fact look a lot like FASD in a lot of ways. The difference is, though, he was able to overcome a lot of it because his brain damage happened after birth. And so
it was an acquired injury, not an injury that occurred in development, which makes FASD so unique. I just wanted to make that distinction because I really love what you say in your message. So I don't want folks who may be listening to say, oh, she's, you know, a trainer. Like, no, you have to practice this stuff too. And you still have a smile on your face. You still sound like that. So absolutely. And so harm reduction is a model that is just like understanding FASD. It is unorthodoxed. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because what you're telling people to do is against what they learned as parents or how they were parented. Mm-hmm. So what I hear mostly from parents and from my audience is, you know, when I start thinking harm reduction, when somebody's talking, is when truancy starts happening, like, you know, leaving either school or leaving home, you know, AKA running away, truancy from school, you know, just these behaviors that no matter what the parents try, you know, behavior modification wise, this is what's happening. Kids are partying, dangerous situations, you know, even leaving at night. So let's talk about harm reduction that way, if you don't mind, Megan, like to serve the folks that are dealing with that. So how in your trainings are you, because you know it's about to happen. You're about to say, okay, this is what's going on and watch this. This is how you deal with it. So I'm sure you're ready for the faces. How do you approach that when you're teaching harm reduction and pretend there's folks, you know, in front of you?
Yeah. So if you've got a kid who's running away, often our normal natural response is to punish them and be mad at them, right? It seems logical, but the more you punish and are mad at them, the more they want to run away because they don't fully understand why they're being punished, because they can't always make those connections, right? So if you've got a kid with a brain that can make connections, then punishments will work, or maybe.
Right. Yeah, sometimes.
The jury's still out on that one.
Yeah,
But when you're talking about kids with brain difference who can't make those connections that from action to consequence, then they're just like, oh my gosh, this is awful and I don't want to be here. And then the running away gets worse and worse and worse, right? So punishment is the exact opposite of what we want to do. We want to connect, right? It's like you're mad at this kid for running away and it feels so wrong to welcome them with open arms, like hugging them. Oh, I'm so glad you're back. And, you know, like it feels wrong because it was a bad thing. but they don't understand why it might have been a bad thing, because they were out having a good time and they're happy about it, right? And you also, you have this like need inside of you to like, I don't want to reinforce that, right? That is a valid
yeah,
kind of concern.
Because it's ingrained with them, and you know, even say biological maternal moms, foster parent adoptives, they would have raised other kids that way and that worked, and now this is happening. So how are you now introducing harm reduction there?
Yeah, so we really need to look at like the whole picture and go back to what led to them running away in the first place, right? And they might not be able to remember, but we got to really try to dig down and figure out what was going on, what happened before that. You got to look at the like what led them to think that that was a good idea the first time. And then that's where we start. So that's where we say, okay, if their brain thought this was logical based on this point, based on thinking it's no fun here, I feel trapped and I'm always being yelled at, or whatever their thought process, whatever you can figure out was their thought process.
Yeah, I'm an adult. You know, I'm over 16, could do what I want.
Yeah, my friends tell me I can do what I want, so I'm going to do what I want. So that's what you have to get to the root of, is what was that initial kind of reasoning in their head? And that's where we kind of have to start, is like, okay, so if you're feeling unloved or unsupported, let's work on that, right? So you kind of have to address it like where you say, okay, let's sit down at the table and let's talk about this. And even if they don't remember all of it, at least you can start to say like, you know, I feel like I might have been partially responsible for you feeling like you needed to get out of here, and I'm really sorry about that. And like, be a part of the conversation. Don't make it about I'm the parent and you listen to me, because that's not logical for their brain. Their brain is very much in the moment, very much like whatever feels good right now. And if you're shaking your finger at them and yelling at them, that doesn't feel good. So they're going to run again, right? So we have to kind of let go of the anger and frustration, and we have to get back to, okay, let's connect. Let's talk about what was going on for you, right? And then create the supports around that. Try to build up something so that that feeling doesn't emerge again, that situation doesn't emerge again. So it's so much about prevention, so much about understanding where their brain is at and what's going on for them. And you have because to...
Some of this could also be just stress response.
Yeah, yeah.
So that the home environment is stressful. You know, like it's go ahead. You were going to start talking.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the other side of it too, right? Is if whatever happened caused them to go into stress response, then that's fight or flight, right? And fight or flight, there's no logic. They won't even be able to tell you why they did it. They ran because their brain told them their life was in danger.
That's caveman stuff,
yeah. Right?
Like, you know, live, yeah, survive.
Yeah, and so much of what's going on for a lot of individuals with FASD goes back to that stress response. It goes back to that their logical brain can't talk them down from stress. So any little bit of stress can turn them into stress response, right? So their brain's interpreting everything as life or death because they can't think through it. They can't be like, oh, it's actually not that bad, right? Like their brain isn't able to do that for them. And so that's where we need to acknowledge that. So it's like, okay, if you look at them and they're running and you're chasing them and they're running and they don't know why they're running anymore, that's stress response, right? And so that's where we need to stop chasing. We need to be calm. We need to be the one who's like walking behind them, just like, hey, it's okay. I'm just here making sure you're safe. And whenever you're ready to stop running, let me know. I'll be here.
Not get over here right now. Yeah. I'm the parent, right? Because that's kind of what happens, you know, and then it's not good. Like, I also want to touch on if they're always in their stress response and they're producing this cortisol, they go there quicker, right?
Yeah.
And Scientifically, we also know there's something in the brain called the HPA, the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, which is like our stress system. And that is also known to be organically impacted by prenatal alcohol exposure. So they're already like revving high, like an engine, RPM wise. But then if you're a parent, like they could feel like the kid's just doing what they want and they're going to grow up to be an entitled such and such. Like, do you get this kind of feedback?
Sometimes it can feel that way. It really can. But what I find is that once caregivers have like a full training, I'll do like a full day training where I'm explaining all the different brain domains and the reason for these behaviors that we're seeing. And as soon as caregivers can start to see there's reasons behind all of it, that's where they start to go, oh, wait a minute, I'm being mad for no reason, right? So part of it is training. That's one of the biggest things you can do for yourself as a caregiver is just keep getting training, because the more you can make sense of it in your head, the better off everyone in the home is going to be, because so much of it doesn't make sense to the individual themselves, and it doesn't make sense to us if we don't understand the brain basis behind it all, right? So really good training and prevention are like the key to understanding what our kids need, right? And yeah, that harm reduction. So once you see it as a brain issue, and so then it's not, you're not looking at it as purposeful. So then you're not mad at the person. So then you're like, okay, so this brain is stressed out in this situation. This brain is having an issue in this situation. Then you're able to kind of figure out, okay, what does that brain need? Does that brain need love, connection, support, hugs, guidance, right? Like, so you kind of take the...
Yeah. What does the brain need, not the person? Yeah. No, what does the brain need, not the person? You know, one of the things I do in my training, and one that helped me when I was getting frustrated or I would see him start to escalate, the first question I ask is not what did I ask Clayton to do, which is my guy. He knows I talk about him. Shout out Clayton. So not what did I ask Clayton to do, but rather what did I ask Clayton's brain to do? Because you're asking the brain, not the person, because the person is beautiful and he's funny and he's nice and he wants to do well. But that took a while to get there because of the training you mentioned. What was hard for me with harm reduction was substance use. So we're just going to talk about it. Okay. So my guy, smoked marijuana. That's what he did. That's what he said. It helped him. He sold me when he once said, Jeff, life comes at me, like, do you remember that old school video game Guitar Hero?
Yeah.
Where you'd have the plastic guitar and the notes on the screen. And he said, life comes at me like Guitar Hero on expert, and it's too fast and I can't press the buttons. Mm-hmm. He says, when I smoke marijuana, it slows it down and I can see the buttons and I could press it and make the music. And I was like, shit, son, you just sold me, right? Yeah. Right. But then there's also my values and beliefs, like, you know, are you going out to do that? And if he goes out, like, because he would get so wound up if he didn't have any, you know, obviously agitation, aggression, all those, you know, symptoms, but he would straight up leave. So then my harm reduction, which went against my stuff, was to acquire, you know, that for him. Because he could get on a bus, he could A, get ripped off, then B, home on the bus and tell everybody he's got some and make friends and who knows, bring them back. So many opportunities to become vulnerable. Now, how are you introducing that to parents when you're like, listen, this might not, and again, this is just my situation and I'm not a doctor, lawyer, but using the harm reduction method in terms of substance abuse, I guess I'm saying, whether it be drugs or alcohol, how do people really parents get a grip on that?
Yeah. So substances are tough. Cause I've noticed, I don't have any research on it, but I have noticed that a lot of my clients, when they used alcohol, it would affect their brain so, so badly. Like they would some of my clients would have a whole week, some of them a whole month of really poor functioning after a weekend bender. And so that's where it was like, okay, we need to talk about this. Like alcohol is not a good choice for your brain. So what could you use instead? Right? Because it's like they're feeling like they need something. And I was working with adults. So it's like, you know, there's no way I could tell them not to.
Right. So you can't. Yeah.
You can't. It's legal. And so then it's like, well, okay, let's look at this for your brain, right? Like, let's talk about this. Your brain's having a real hard time. You're forgetting way more. And I'm noticing it. And they're like, oh yeah, I'm noticing it too. Right. So bringing that up, having that conversation, helping them recognize that something might be harmful for their brain and then saying, okay, so what might be a better choice? And so then if that client said to me, well, I think marijuana is a better choice. And then I would say, okay, well, then you're going to have to try that and let me know. Right. Cause that's legal now too. So try
in Canada and in a lot of the states.
Yeah.
Just so you know. Yeah. We're in Canada. But here's the kicker though. But so here's how, when harm reduction is actually, because what is on the flip side is that if he didn't, he was going to make himself way more vulnerable for way more harm. So in a sense, yep. Isn't that what harm reduction is?
Yeah. 100%.
You know, if someone's even like, if they are even a drinker, you know, instead of saying, don't ever come back, it's more like, call me if you need the ride, because they feel the shame and the guilt too, I'm sure. And maybe this is bringing it back to what you were talking about connection, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of with addictions, but it's the parents getting over that's enabling, right? You know, and they're not being tough enough. Like what is, when someone brings that up, what would you say to that?
Yeah. So that's tough. Cause there's going to be, you're going to have family members who are going to judge you, right? If especially if your kid's saying, oh yeah, my mom lets me smoke pot. So
then yeah, it's like, because they will. Oh, cause you will. Yeah. Yeah. They will. Yeah. Yeah. That's if they think they're getting away with it, even though you're accommodating, they're going to tell. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So then you've got this like auntie who's like, what are you doing letting your kid smoke pot? Blah, 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 blah. And so that's where you have to be that advocate to say, look, kids are interested in trying things. And we're doing our best to be able to like monitor and support. And so that's why we have these open conversations about it. And so, yeah, my kid's going to tell you I allow it because we want to make sure that they're doing it in a safe way, not in a harmful running away, hiding kind of way. Right. And so that usually kind of shuts people down to let them know, look, kids are going to do it anyway. Don't be in denial about that. That's naive. And so now let's talk about that. It has to be out in the open and we have to have, you know, structure and rules around it and allow support. Right. And so, yeah, just say it how it is. Like, you know, kids
because
do it.
Because you can't, punishment doesn't fix brain damage. Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't. And, you know, they're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're so parents have a choice, you know, do we reduce the harm and try to do that safety? Cause safety first, right? Always, you know, we're not telling, parents to go get a keg and put it in the house. And you know, that's not what we're saying. Unless is that what you're saying, Megan?
No, definitely not.
Okay. We're in agreement that we're not saying that, but at the end of the day, isn't it, you want your to create that connection that you're talking about. But at the end of the day, if you're just starting out, you want your kid home mm-hmm. at night mm-hmm. and in their bed, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm on board with what you were doing where if you're the one purchasing it, it's at home. He doesn't have to go through all the steps to get it and get taken advantage of on the way. Right. So you really have to look at that and it can be really tough. Depending on your kind of like morals and ideals.
That's the thing. Yeah. I'll tell you what my moral was. Can we just not have them rage? Peace was my goal, right? Yeah. Like that was the goal. Boundaries were set, not in the house. Although if I left longer than 40 minutes, that boundary went out the window. So my bad. But he would go for a walk. with his buddy. And lo and behold, they would come home and they'd be happy, hungry, and then he'd be sleepy.
Exactly.
You know, and we're not saying it's for everybody, dear Lord, but that's, we're just talking in terms of harm reduction for both and other drugs too, right?
Yeah, you got to look at the big picture. You got to look at kind of the whole thing, right? Are they happier when they've used it? Are they more peaceful? Are things going better? Is it helping their brain? Of course, if you've got someone who says, like, I want to use meth, and then they come home and destroy the house, then we need to say, you know what, meth isn't a good choice, right? Like, meth causes you to be angry and aggressive, and that's not good for anybody, right? So yeah, like, you do have to still understand, you know, that not every substance is going to work well, but if there is something that is working well, then let's let go of that kind of stigma, right? Like, because I think cannabis especially has a big stigma, and so you just have to be like, okay, you know what, maybe it's not for me, but that doesn't mean it's not for other people, right? And just kind of leave it at that,
and be okay, because it's it. Like, yeah, it's what's the goal, because they're going to do it regardless. This is what I'm talking for the people who, and it doesn't matter what you put in place, how many times you ground them or threaten them, or, you know, now that just makes it worse because you're talking about what you're talking about. Now the environment's not good for their brain and, you know, secondary trauma and all of this. And at the end of the day, this can be avoided, although we started there, building that relationship to begin with, if we understand why people are using in the first place, right? So, you know, individuals on the spectrum are, I know men and women use for different reasons, but often at the end of the day, it's to suppress a trauma. It's a stimulant to suppress something that does not make them feel good that happened on their life journey, whether a prenatal adversity or postnatal adversity. So that's where we have to start looking to start making things better. But the harm reduction model is for the parents that are like, it doesn't matter what I do, the kid leaves, the kid's like out of control, does this. This is to rein sort of, you know, that in, because the flip side of the coin, the consequences are very real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, and I've seen it. I've seen it with my clients who join a gang, right? Like, I had a client who joined a gang and didn't know he joined a gang because he just, you know, wasn't feeling connected at home. And so he just started hanging out with friends, and the longer he hung around them, the more they were like, well, you're one of us now. And he had no idea. He didn't want to join a gang. And so as he would tell me, he was like, yeah, I wear red, you know, because my cousin tells me that that'll keep me safe. And I was like, oh, bud, did you join a gang? And he's like, no, I would never, right? And about 3 months later, he's like, I joined a gang. I didn't mean to, like, because he really didn't. And even though I could see that it had, you know, they had initiated him long before, he didn't know until somebody finally said it out loud, like, well, you're part of the gang now, right? And so that's the thing, is that if we are disconnected at home because we're mad about their substance use, we're mad about their behaviors, we're mad, right? If we're holding those grudges, they will go elsewhere to find connection. And
bingo.
That sucks, right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't want that. We don't want to lead our kids to join gangs. We don't want that. And we definitely don't want to feel like we're the ones responsible for it. But in the end, if we are constantly angry at those behaviors, not understanding that they're brain-based, that they are a message from the brain, then we're disconnected. We're angry and disconnected, and they're going to search. And it's not that they don't love us or that they're trying to make us mad. It's really just that they're searching to meet that need. They're not doing it on purpose.
And while we are also not caregiver shaming,
no,
this is the consequence. This is why so many placements break down.
Yes. Yeah. So we just need to acknowledge it, right? That, like, underneath all of it is that the really important thing of understanding their brain. We have to acknowledge that comes first. If we're not understanding their brain and we're just mad at them for their behaviors, that is what causes most of the turmoil in our lives, right? If we can come to a place of acknowledging that it's brain-based and that it's not purposeful or willful, then we're able to let go of some of those little things and forgive and forget and move on, right? That's the most important thing.
Yes, because the benefit of harm reduction is to have someone feel that they belong and that, you know, that they are loved, and then they start to get belief that they, you know, they can meet these needs elsewhere. But I also need the belief from the caregiver, because they're not, you know, even with understanding doesn't mean consistency, right? In terms of behavior. And that's why the importance of harm reduction. So if one time they do regress and come back, it's not, oh, well, we're fixed, and it's none of that. Harm reduction also is basically like leading with empathy too. You are just a few situations or experiences away from feeling like they do.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the other thing too is, like, you know, I kind of painted a little bit of a bad picture saying that, you know, we can be the cause sometimes, but sometimes it is really just impulsivity, right? Sometimes they just go out and meet a friend and they just want a friend, and you know, and so that also is where we need to have that understanding that that's brain-based, and that when they go out and walk down a back alley and meet a drug dealer, they weren't trying to do that. They weren't trying to be bad. They were just trying to make a friend, and they didn't have the skills to do that. And so that is just another lesson for us that we need to go on those walks with them. Right?
100%. Yeah, this is where we get into executive functioning and all of that stuff. And we do, you know, they want things, they have hopes and dreams, and the skills that organically their brain has isn't enough sometimes for them to fulfill those goals that they have. Mm-hmm. So they're just as frustrated. You know, I say, and I've heard, I think it was from Donna, they're just as frustrated with themselves as we are with them. Everybody is their own worst critic, and they're no different. I love what you say. See, it's already almost an hour. It goes by so quick. I love what you say about this. You say, start and end your day with this thought. Individuals with FASD do the best they can with what they've got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you can always just remember that they're doing their best every day, it's easier to not be so angry. Right? Because if their best is a meltdown, well, then maybe we need to step up a little bit more, right? It puts it into a little bit of perspective that, like, meltdown days, well, that's their best they've got today. And what's going on underneath that? Probably lack of sleep. Probably, you know, they need different nourishment. I don't know. There's other things we have to look at where we don't have
side effects of medication.
Yeah, we don't have to be mad at the individual, right? As soon as we say they're doing the best they can with what they've got, even on those bad days, we then acknowledge that, like, they're human. They're human and they're having a bad day. And that's okay, right? And we don't have to join them in the bad day. We can say, I get that you're having a bad day, and that's okay. What do you need from me? Right? Instead of meeting them with, like, combative rage or anger.
We got to get this done. And this is what you talked about, expectations, mm-hmm. about changing them. And you specifically, I remember in your workshop, you know, not lower, right? Change them to meet where they are developmentally.
Yeah. Yeah. Meet them where they're at that day. And so
that was a good one. Yeah,
that's going to be your challenge, right? As a caregiver, support person, the biggest challenge is to figure out where are they today, right? Like, are they having one of those real good top of the wave days, or are they underneath banging their head on the rocks, right? And so that's where we have to be like, okay, if you're down there banging your head on the rocks, I'm going to pull out the flotation device. I'm going to swim down there. I'm going to pull you up. And so those days are going to be more work for us, right?
And if the days are floating on the wave, you're just going to make a lunch.
Yeah.
So when they're hungry and they need to come in. A way to use my metaphor to help me understand. We're going to tie it back to exactly why people say you're good at explaining it. Yeah, such a gentle way to do it. It's not easy, Megan, you're telling people to think and to go against what your beliefs and your instincts are in terms of these behaviors, which some parents could make it seem like it's out of control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry. My Wi-Fi wasn't great. So your amazing thought cut out a little.
That's okay. We'll just have it like crickets. I'll do that. I'll put in crickets. Two more questions. The first question is, so you see a parent, and right now there's some that are driving, walking, doing the laundry, just trying to get some respite, and they're really struggling, you know, what is with that teenager, with that older maybe person in adulthood where they feel like the kid is out of control, you know, what are you saying to them?
So every day is a new day. And so if today is hard, take a lot of deep breaths, take a lot of walks, and acknowledge that tomorrow could be better. And then just like, you really got to get yourself to a place of like, where can I meet them? Right. You know, especially when you're working with youth, oh my gosh, so what I always say with youth that are hard to work with, especially find their interest, figure out what they're interested in, what they like, and just keep bringing it up. Just keep getting them to come to you, to have those conversations so that they want to be around you, right? And that can be the thing that turns you around, right? The thing that makes them forget, you know, that today was a bad day. And so sometimes you can kind of use that memory deficit to your advantage. You change the subject, just like, hey, let's go over here.
Yep.
What's this new thing? You know, what's that new song that you really like? Or let's watch it on YouTube.
I would do this one. You'd use the, you know, vulnerabilities for good, right? Use the powers for good. And I would say, hey, remember when you said you wanted to do this and he didn't want to say it. He'd be like, oh yeah, I remember. Well, let's go do it. If it was like, go for a walk or, you know, go to whatever we did, we liked, what was that place, like the giant arcade and the Palladium, you know, in Southern Ontario, things like that. So mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Use it for the greater good. And that's really good advice. And I would put on top in that, you know, their outcomes are not your failures as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know. You know now, because I deal with this, you know, even with in my coaching program, one understanding is followed by a wave of grief, of guilt. I should have done, you know. That's my last question to you. Second last, I'm lying. How do you help a caregiver who's going through that, who feels that way, once they make that connection, that brain connection?
That happens a lot when I do my trainings. People come up to me after, like, oh my God, I didn't know. And what I say is, you couldn't have known what you didn't know. It's not your fault. It's not your fault that you didn't know it yet. And you don't have to be mad at yourself for it, right? We learn from hard times. We learn from those hard experiences. So just look back on it and think, what was that teaching me, right? So instead of being mad, just say, okay, tomorrow I'm going to do better if I can, right? If I got enough sleep and I got enough nutrition, yep, right? like, let's be real and honest with ourselves. We don't always have good days either. Sometimes we are malnourished and dehydrated and angry, and that's okay.
And dealing with pandemics and homeschooling and virtual lessons and also bouncing between two houses while one gets renovated and dealing with kids and spouses, right?
Yeah, it's hard. Life can be really hard, and we need to forgive ourselves for being human. Being human is hard. It's a lot of work. We're not always going to get it right. We don't always have what we need in the moment. We don't always know what we should know or feel like we should have known, right? We can't. We can't know it before we know it. When we know it, then it's our job to try to do better. And then it's also our job to forgive ourselves for when we have bad days, right? So like, even if you know better and you're still having a bad day, that it's still not your fault. It's just a bad day, right? Like, you just just forgiveness.
You're the FAS. You are the FASD Mary Poppins. Not Mary Poppins. You're Megan Poppins. Dude, it is official. It is a fit with a slant of cyberpunk. Guys, you have to go to the blog, fasdsuccess.com/podcast, because her hair is wild, but it's so awesome and it fits you. I think it's great. I remember meeting you first and I was like, you're gonna be cool. you're gonna be cool. I think it's fantastic. Last question, buddy. What's the future for Megan? What are you thinking here, either with Lakeland or where are you going? What do you want? What's going on?
Well, okay. We've got like, what do you want? You want like 5-year plan, 10-year plan?
Oh yeah. Like, where's Megan in the future? Like when we, you know, yeah. Give me the elevator pitch of where do you see yourself in 5 years? Like, what do you want to do? What else do you want to do? What goes on?
Well, give me the I want to get into research. I do want to go back to school, but I am also very realistic about the fact that, you know, my son's in university, and I'm, you know, funding part of that. So my finishing or going back, cause I have 3 years of post-secondary. I did not finish my degree cause, you know, I was a single parent when I was doing it and I couldn't afford to keep going. So at some point I feel like I have a good brain. I could do a lot with FASD and research. So I do want to go down that road. But I also am very holistic, very much looking at how everything impacts us, right? What we eat, how we sleep, what we choose as our activities, being with nature, and that whole, like I said, the indigenous ways of knowing, connecting to the earth, understanding that everything is connected. We all have responsibility to each other, to the earth, to, you know, everything. And so I really want to look at, you know, a more holistic approach and really start to, I want to do some research around like land-based healing with individuals with FASD. So, but that's probably a couple of years away, probably when I go back to university.
Hey man, I never asked for deadlines. I said, where do you, don't interrupt your own dreams. Yeah. Just put it out there and whatever happens, happens, because you know why I'm saying this, dude, your message is great. You're a great person. And I have no doubt that if you keep serving this community, like you're doing that, that'll all happen. The only difference is time. So, hey, last one, will you come do this again in the future?
Oh yeah, for sure. You're so good. I love chatting with you. I would.
We're just talking. Yeah. We're just talking. That's the point, right? I want Megan people to feel that they were just sitting at the table with us, or on a conference bus. You remember that? Mm-hmm. We have to get to the airport, and they're just it was a luxurious bus, by the way.
I know.
And they're. Right. You're like, what are we doing here? Almost.
Yeah.
You know,
why are we on the
got on the wrong one. Yeah. Like those group of ladies, you guys are all awesome. And, I'm glad we're connected and, I can't wait to do this again soon.
Yeah. So I'm starting this thing, monthly where I am going to do like lunch talks. I got to rework the name. I called it Lunch and Learn, but I really think it's, we should just talk, you know? And so every month, every second Tuesday, I'm going Zoom Facebook Live on our Facebook page, Lakeland Center for FASD. And each month I'm going to have one of our other staff members and we're going to talk. We're just going to talk for 45 minutes about whatever. And so next week on Tuesday, January 12th, I am talking with our employment coordinator and we're going to talk about stigma and employment. And so yeah, like that, I love this whole, like, just like,
hey, let's, cool. Let's chat. And so how could people, and so if people are driving and they're like, cause you don't want them to write it down and cause accidents,
right?
Production, right? Megan,
yeah.
Where's the link where they could find out about the lunch and stop and learn and eat and talk?
All you got to do is go to Facebook and search Lakeland Center for FASD, find our page, scroll down and you'll see my little poster. Yeah. Like it. And you'll see my little poster and, Yeah. So there's two ways to do it. You can either just watch the Facebook Live, you can watch us talk, or if you wanted to talk with us, you can join via Zoom. And so you just like comment on my post and I will give you the Zoom link and voila. Cool.
We will get that all set up again on our blog, fasdsuccess.com/podcast. And we will make sure that all of that information. So if you want to hang out with Megan some more, because you should, she's awesome. I would do that. Thanks for being here, buddy. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. It was super fun. You're good to talk to.
Oh, thank you very much, Megan Tucker. See, you can tell she is awesome and she knows what she's talking about. You gave some great points. Now, I was having such a good conversation with her. I know we went over time, so I respect your time, so I don't want to take a lot of time. Usually I go through it, but there was so much. It's a five-timer. Right? It's a five-timer. You're going to have to listen to this one five times, especially if you could sit down and take some notes. But I'll tell you this. I'll run down a few things. I love what she says. FASD has many effects on the same person. Every single person is different. Even if you see 10 people on the spectrum, you won't see the same person. So what you read or what you hear, what you see might work for one individual, but might not work for your individual. You might have multiple individuals on the spectrum in your house and what works for them. One of your kids is not going to work for the other kid. She said, it was interesting what she said, good days I said being a double-edged sword, right? You have to be careful of good days because we tend to get so excited and see, you know, they are capable of this all the time. We can do this. And then the very next day, they're not having a very good brain day. And so the resentment goes up. I like what she talked about. I like how she equated, you know, the spidey sense, you know, like your intuition to see if a situation is not giving you a very good vibe, and how some of our individuals can struggle with that intuition, with that spidey sense. I also loved what she says about the root of everything is prevention. We need to understand that individuals with fetal alcohol's brains are different. We need to understand their brain. And my favorite thing she said about in this whole interview, she said, if you are looking at how they look physically and that their behaviors are willful and purposeful, then you're going to be constantly mad at them. You're going to be distant. You're going to disconnect. And what does everybody need? Connection. When we don't understand the disability, we disconnect. And so they will go and look for connection elsewhere. That's, I can't tell you how many situations that just makes absolute sense. Now, I'll circle back and say what she said. She's not pointing the finger and saying, oh, it's the parents' fault. Because oftentimes you don't know what you don't know. And our default is to disconnect. Well, I tried everything. It's all on them. They're not doing this and they're not doing that. And we get resentment. And resentment is the enemy here. And so our kids want to connect. All humans want to connect. And I know it's frustrating and we're trying to connect. And, you know, it's not easy when you're wanting to connect and they hate everything. And you say black and they say white. And you say this is good and they say this is bad. And it could get super frustrating. Or, you know, because they could struggle with consequences, understanding logical, natural consequences. What I found was really frustrating for me was an individual on the spectrum would do something and then they would tell you it was wrong. They would tell you why it was wrong and they would say they would never do it again. And then the next day, you know, the same thing would happen. So we'd take that uber personal. But I like how Megan always, you know, let's bring this back to the brain. Let's understand the individual's brain. I thought it was powerful. You could tell that she's been training for a long time. So Megan, thank you so much for being here. It's what you guys do. Oh, and by the way, this is for the end of the show squad. If you're new here and this is the longest you've ever listened to, we kind of like make a little mini session for folks who listen all the way through. And if that's you, and if you listen all the way through and you haven't written me yet and told me so, just write me, jeff@fasdforever.com. And let me know that you listen to the end of the show, because I love talking to folks, interacting. And it's just hard right now when I can't see your sweet faces because nobody is allowed to go anywhere. But I digress. You are doing so amazing. And here, I just wanted to give you a little bit of something to think about that, you know, just popped into my head really when I was getting ready for a coaching call for some of the groups that I coach. This is all about, I find the pandemic is all about taking your only if and transforming it into even if. What do I mean by that? Because if our language is, a lot of our language is, if only my spouse would get it, if only the teacher would get it, if only COVID wasn't happening, if only this wasn't going on, if only, if only, if only, if only. I want to change your language from if only to even if. So even if we're in a pandemic, even if my spouse doesn't understand, even if the school doesn't understand, even if I know that I am a good parent and I am doing the best I can every single day to make my kid's situation the best it could be given the situation. So I want you to think about that this week. If you try and catch yourself thinking, are you thinking only if, only if? Only if. Try switching your conversation to even if. Even if. That is way more empowering, because you are powerful. You can do this. You're still doing it. You are still here, and there's a reason for that. So do not stop now. Do not give up now. Do not quit. Create connections. You're freaking awesome. I love you. We will be back next week. We got some more awesome guests that I've already done their interviews, and like, I just can't wait for you to show them. I want to just release everything right now, but that wouldn't work either. So come back here, same time, same channel next week. Again, I love you, and I will see you then. Bye.